content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include Flexible Pay Service Can Be a Lifeline for Employees, and Cities Offers for Amazon Are Secrets Even to Leaders. And we'll begin with Flexible Pay Service Can Be a Lifeline for Employees. Luis Vasquez and his girlfriend were down to their last $50 after she got sick and had to miss work for a month. He already paid his rent and bills for the month, but without her income, the couple couldn't cover groceries and other essentials. His next paycheck was more than a week away. Faced with a similar cash crunch years ago, Vasquez had resorted to a payday loan, a high-interest, short-term loan meant to tide a borrower over until the next paycheck. But the couple and their toddler son were eventually evicted from their apartment because they couldn't make both their rent and the loan payments. Vasquez vowed never to take out such a loan again. This time, he had another option. An overnight support manager at Walmart, Vasquez was able to get a $150 advance on his pay using an app that allows the company's employees to access up to half their earned wages during a pay period. A growing number of companies are rolling out products and services that allow employees to receive a portion of their pay when they need it. This can help workers, especially those making hourly wages or working irregular schedules, to avoid unpleasant and potentially costly options such as borrowing from loved ones, running up credit card debt, selling possessions, or taking out payday or other high-interest loans when bills come due or emergencies arise before the next paycheck. Could this be the future of payday? Developers of flexible pay services say adhering to a rigid pay cycle doesn't make sense. Josh Reeves, CEO and co-founder of the payroll company Gusto, sees a model in the way parents pay their kids for doing chores. If they mow the lawn, they get paid right away, Reeves says. We think in the future, everyone will get paid for their work when they do it. Some experts acknowledge that giving employees early access to their pay can backfire if, for instance, they spend the money unwisely. But the need for flexible pay services is clear. About one-third of U.S. adults were either unable to pay their monthly bills or were one modest financial setback away from financial hardship last year, according to a recent survey by the Federal Reserve. Vasquez started working at Walmart in November and says he used the app six times since Walmart made it available in December. The app was developed by the technology company Even. Vasquez pays $6 a month to use the app, and there's no transaction fee. By comparison, a payday loan typically carries an annual percentage rate of 300% to 500% and is due in a lump sum or balloon payment on the borrower's next payday. Vasquez didn't provide the terms of the payday loan he took out years ago. It gives me peace of mind, Vasquez said. Newer companies such as Uber and Lyft have used immediate payment as their model for years. Now other organizations are catching on to the advantages of a flexible payday. John Schlossberg, CEO of Even, says more than 200,000 of Walmart's 1.4 million U.S. employees use his company's app, which also has a cash flow projection feature that deducts upcoming bills from expected pay and shows users an okay-to-spend balance. Gusto, which provides its payroll services to more than 60,000 businesses nationwide, recently began offering its flexible pay option as an add-on feature at no cost to employers or employees. The company just launched the service in Texas and plans to expand it to additional states later this year. There is a tremendous need for such services in the U.S. for several reasons, said Rachel Schneider of the Aspen Institute Financial Security Program and co-author of the book The Financial Diaries, How American Families Cope in a World of Uncertainty. Income and spending needs are volatile and don't always match up. While some households might be able to make their finances work on paper over the course of a year, they could end up short in any given month, she says. Some families can build up savings to provide a cushion, but for many workers, the cost of living is outpacing wage growth by such a wide margin that expecting them to save their way out of volatility is not realistic, Schneider says. Cutting checks for every employee used to be time-consuming and costly for companies, which partly explains why many have spread out the pay period. Now the process is largely automated and new technology has enabled more flexibility in timing. It takes no extra effort or little effort, so leaving people subject to an outdated rhythm payment or cadence, there's no real logic to it, said Schneider. There are some potential downsides, though. The immediate access to cash may encourage some people to pick up extra shifts when they are short. While that makes sense in the near term, it can backfire on workers over time. This bigger pool of labor would take the pressure off employers to increase wages, Schneider says. Employees could also burn through cash faster. Some companies have countered that by limiting the number of times workers can access their money or by only making a portion available. And some are adding a financial counseling component to their services. Flex Wage Solutions is offering a package that combines its flexible pay service with Trusted Advisor, a mobile phone tool developed by the New York City nonprofit Neighborhood Trust Financial Partners, to give employees access to one-on-one financial counseling. Restaurant chain Panda Express is the first to sign on, says Flex Wage CEO Frank Dombrowski. The two organizations are also testing an app that would integrate the flexible pay and counseling functions with a cash flow projection feature. Developers of flexible pay services also say they can help employers stand out in the current tight job market in the U.S. Instant Financial, which began offering flexible pay options in 2017, says its instant pay service improves employee satisfaction, increases job applications, and reduces turnover. The company, based in Canada, works with a number of large U.S. employers. And next, Citi's offers for Amazon are secrets even to leaders. Jared Evans, a member of the Indianapolis City Council, is proud that the city is among 20 finalists for one of the most coveted prizes in the country, the planned second headquarters of Amazon. He does, however, have one small question. What financial incentives did his city dangle in front of Amazon? What have I been told? Evans said. Absolutely nothing. Across the country, the search for HQ2, as the project has been nicknamed, is shrouded in secrecy. Even civic leaders cannot find out what sort of tax credits and other inducements have been promised to Amazon. And there is a growing legal push to find out, because taxpayers could get saddled with a huge bill and have little chance to stop it. The only time the public may become aware if the city has promised Amazon incentives is if we win, and then we need to get those incentives passed, Evans said. A primary reason for the information blackout is that in many cases, the bids were handled by local private Chamber of Commerce affiliates or economic development groups that are not required to make their negotiations public. Many of the groups are also not covered by Freedom of Information Acts or state open records requests. In the Triangle, the Research Triangle Regional Partnership and Association of Economic Development Agencies submitted 7 sites for Amazon to consider. The Raleigh-Durham area is one of the 20 finalists, but the partnership has refused to reveal any details of its proposal. North Carolina state law allows negotiations between companies and the state to remain secret while underway. Another reason for the secrecy is gamesmanship. Some cities say they want their Amazon proposals to remain confidential to avoid showing their hand to rivals. And Amazon required the finalists to sign non-disclosure agreements that forbid the local groups to release proprietary information about the company. I don't know what we offered Amazon in terms of financial incentives, but I believe Amazon wants to see the biggest incentive package that any city will offer them, said Leslie Poole, a member of the Austin City Council in Texas. The city, also a finalist, submitted a bid put together by the Greater Austin Chamber of Commerce, which had no consultations with the city council. With so much secrecy and bids like Austin's that involve unelected officials making promises, there is the risk that taxpayers and their civic leaders will be forced to accept the proposed terms or live with turning down an enormously lucrative opportunity. Amazon, which is expected to make $235 billion in revenue this year, promises to bring the winning location up to 50,000 high-paying jobs and a $5 billion investment in construction. When the competition was announced last year, 238 places vied to be considered. In January, that list was winnowed to 20 finalists, which are now waiting to find out whether their communities will land the project. There is widespread speculation that the company could cut the field down again as soon as this month, asking for best and final offers. Amazon has not offered any updates, and a spokeswoman declined to answer questions about the process or the company's plans on the record. The few bids that have become public are breathtaking financial packages that indicate just how much states are willing to pony up to woo Amazon. Maryland puts together an $8.5 billion tax incentive, and infrastructure bid, and local and state officials in New Jersey got legislative approval to offer Amazon $7 billion in tax credits and incentives to pick Newark. But that kind of transparency is the exception. We are not releasing documents related to Amazon HQ2. We are not subject to FOIA. Michael Finley, the president and chief executive of the Miami-Dade Beacon Council, a public-private partnership that handled the Amazon bid, said in an email. Similar requests to Austin, Atlanta, and Indianapolis met with similar responses. Newark released its proposal only after a citizen filed a lawsuit, and officials in other places are fighting legal challenges. The mayor's office of Chicago is pushing back against a transparency-seeking public advocacy group. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Pennsylvania are challenging rulings by the State Office of Open Records that said the city's pitches should be made entirely public. It has been reported that Apple has been meeting behind closed doors with government leaders as it shops for a new corporate campus. The Raleigh area is also reportedly in the running for the Apple campus. The News and Observer reported in May that legislative leaders had eliminated a $6,500 per job cap on incentives awards as part of an effort to recruit a transformative project. Next, feelings run deep over rebuilding dam on Little River, and this is in Zebulon. A 150-year-old stone dam across the Little River in Zebulon held back just a few feet of water before it was breached by flooding from Hurricane Matthew. But the feelings over whether to rebuild the dam run much deeper. Zebulon asked the Federal Emergency Management Agency in February for more than $815,000 to make improvements to a park around the ruins of the dam. But the town's plan is to let the structure itself go unrepaired, leaving the free-running river to tumble over the relics. Some residents say the town is missing a golden opportunity to preserve a rare bit of rural heritage while adding something new. They argue that federal money should be used to repair the dam, and they say the town should raise additional funds through grants and donations to develop the park. The argument, which has run on more or less since the dam was breached in October 2016, has caused tense town commission meetings and social media feuding between once friendly neighbors. Residents who feel their views have been dismissed have planted signs around the eastern Wake County community, used a Facebook page demanding that the town board give a dam, and launched petitions on change.org. At first, it broke my heart to see that dam after the hurricane, said John Middlesworth, who has lived in Zebulon for 40 years and who spent uncounted hours in the 1980s picking up trash around the picturesque dam and prying weeds and saplings out of its mortar joints. The masonry structure, one of tens of thousands built around the country in the 1800s, went up in 1871. It first powered a grist mill and was later used by an ice plant and eventually converted to produce electricity and impound water for Zebulon's residents to drink. Zebulon now gets its water from Raleigh, so the impoundment is no longer needed, but it added considerable charm to a town established in the early 1900s by prospectors drawn by the promise of a railroad line nearby. By the 1950s, the area around the dam, about 2.3 miles from downtown Zebulon, was being used for recreation with imported sand serving as a makeshift beach. Older residents say they knew people who were baptized at the site. More recently, the masonry structure had long been showing its age. Hurricane Fran blew out a section in 1996, and Hurricane Floyd took out chunks 3 years later. Both times, FEMA and the state paid to bring the dam back to its pre-storm condition, the most the agency is allowed to do after a natural disaster. So, after Hurricane Matthew, Middlesworth said he too wanted the Little River Dam rebuilt. But as time went on, he said, and read about how many families in North Carolina still had no permanent home because there wasn't enough FEMA money to help rebuild their flooded houses, he began to see the possible reconstruction of the dam as a different kind of obstruction. With all those people needing housing, rebuilding that dam with public funds is just immoral, Middlesworth said. Zebulon Town Manager Joe Moore sees a financial issue, not a moral one, in the dam's fate. While rainfall from Hurricane Matthew took out only two sections of the stacked stone dam, the entire structure is in really bad shape, he said. It hasn't been maintained. You have roots growing through it, mortar joints broken out, and it doesn't really function as a dam anymore. FEMA would only repair the parts of the dam that Hurricane Matthew damaged. We would have to repair the rest, or it will fail again when the next big storm comes along. The town also would have to pay to maintain, inspect, and insure the dam at a time when its 5,000 or so residents also need road widening projects, a new fire station, and firefighting equipment. If the dam did fail again, it could damage the NC-97 bridge that traverses the river just below the dam, as it did when Hurricane Matthew hit, forcing drivers to detour for miles while months-long repairs were made. In deciding what to do, the town held a series of public meetings and conducted surveys of residents at places where they gather. It queried Boy Scouts who came to work in the park, a yoga group whose members stretch on the rocks by the river, shoppers at the town's farmers market, and people who attended Zebulon's Daffodil Days festival. It surveyed people online through email lists and Facebook pages, and the town says the surveys indicate that more people want to leave the dam breached than want it repaired. Moore recommended, and a majority of the town board voted, to ask for money from a relatively new FEMA disaster funding stream for alternate projects. Essentially, the program allows a community to apply for a grant in the amount needed to repair damage from a natural disaster, but the community doesn't have to spend the money on the repair if it decides that it's not in the public's best interest. To apply for the funds, Zebulon commissioned engineering studies and cost estimates as if it were going to repair the dam, and asked FEMA for that amount of money, $815,464. If approved, FEMA would pay for most of the project and the state would cover the rest. With that money, Moore said, the town would develop a master plan for the 22-acre Little River Park. That eventually would turn it into a regional destination with an expanded children's play area, walking and hiking trails, a wetlands boardwalk, preserved forest, open grassy areas, historical and environmental education, picnicking, camping, kayak launch, and restroom facilities. People could tube in the river, which would be restored to a free-flowing stream, and there would be places to fish and play on the banks. Frank Timberlake has lived in Zebulon for more than three decades and says that in addition to being the owner of a successful advertising, public relations, and marketing firm, he's a parks guy. I'm not a tree hugger, he said, but I'm all about public facilities. He's also about history and heritage, he said, and much of what Zebulon had, it let get away. The circa 1940s Wake Lawn Theater in town, the giant trees that lined Gannon Avenue, many of its older homes. The Little River Dam, Timberlake said, is a tangible connection to the past that the town should find a way to keep, a position he makes clear on his It's a Damn Shame Facebook page. Commenters there promise to remember their commissioners' votes on the dam come the next election. The dam is the nucleus, Timberlake said, the focal point of what would be the park they want to build. If the dam is not saved, the nucleus is gone. Timberlake is confident that if the town board were to reverse its vote and elect to use FEMA money to save the structure, it could then secure grants to do the rest of the park development. The difference is the amenities would be built around a small lake instead of a restored stream, and the photogenic structure would remain. FEMA has yet to notify Zebulon whether it will get any funding, and with so much damage from Hurricane Matthew still to be repaired across eastern North Carolina, it's anybody's guess whether the money will come. If it does, the town board could vote to revisit the issue of rebuilding the dam. But so far, no commissioner has suggested doing so in an open meeting. Whatever happens, Middlesworth isn't sure he wants to see it. I've worked so hard to make that place a nice park where people could come with their families and be together, he said, and now it's just tearing the town apart. And next, U.S. looking for 606,000 who overstayed visas. The U.S. government has pulled together the numbers and nationalities of foreign travelers who entered the country legally in 2017 as non-immigrants but overstayed their visas or their authorized periods of admission, thus remaining in the country without legal status. The Department of Homeland Security report for fiscal year 2017 shows that more than 606,000 visitors to the United States overstayed their tourist, work, business, and student visas, among other categories of non-immigrant admissions. Those violations represent a tiny portion, 1.15%, or 606,926 suspected overstays of the estimated 52.6 million non-immigrant admissions through air or sea ports of entry, according to the report. However, despite the Trump administration's measures to strengthen immigration enforcement, this was the second year in a row in which more than 600,000 visitors stayed in the U.S. beyond their period of admission, becoming undocumented immigrants at risk of deportation. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.